When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Bruce Kulick, and you're listening to Shout It Out Loudcast with Tom and Zeus. These guys know KISS inside and out. They freak me out all the time. You're going to enjoy it. The episode is epic.
Shout it out loudcast.
Shout it out loudcast. Hello. Hey, what's up there, KISS Army? Tom and Zeus, another episode of Shout It Out Loudcast. Episode 164, Hal Sparks. Hal. Private.
Oh, come on. You know that. Few good men, people. Yeah, we got a nice big guest today here. Big fans of Hal Sparks, and he came on, and we're going to get to it in a minute. But that was a really, really nice treat for us to talk to him for a long time. It was great.
Yeah, that could have gone on for hours. So we're going to fly through this stuff so we can get to the interview.
Yep.
But, Tom, how are you?
Fantastic. it was 65 degrees yesterday. We're recording on Wednesday, February 24th. It was 65 degrees yesterday in southern New Hampshire. And tomorrow, Friday the 25th, we are getting a foot of snow.
Woohoo!
Yeah, wonderful. Wonderful living in New England.
You've got a headache, I think you were telling me earlier.
I have a slight headache. Oh, boy. It's a big one. I took a terrible tumble.
I was telling you, my team was seeded number one, just lost in overtime and got eliminated in the playoffs. My
Tell
hockey team coaching, but and I can't control my anger to these high school kids. And I should have said to them, like, it's all right, guys. You know, you tried hard, you worked hard this year. It was no, you motherfuckers,
you bunch of fucking losers.
You fucking blew this. You know how much this sucks? The fuck? I hate fucking losing. Fuck.
Coach. It's okay. I leave early.
No. It's okay. I leave early. Find
a place to live.
No. You did what? To their what?
We put liquid heat in their what? In their jocks.
Glad you nerds. Trilams fought back.
Here it comes.
Yeah. Greatest comedy of all time.
Oh, it's up there.
It's up there, yeah.
It's up there.
Maybe I spoke too soon, but it's
up there. No. Maybe for the 80s, I would no doubt of the 80s. Yes.
Yeah. You know how we go. We always had the trifecta of Slapshot, Coming to America, and Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, yeah.
Am I missing one?
Animal House was a big one in college.
Yeah, Animal House. Yeah. I still think it was a little step down from those three.
Oh, I agree.
Right. Yeah. Especially for quotes for us.
Oh, for quote. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
Because Revenge of the Nerds had the best, like, stupid things in the side background.
Oh, that's a movie. You could just like pause it and laugh at shit in the background.
Oh, I'm afraid we can. See, well, you nerds, trilams.
Anybody here have allergies? Me too.
Excuse, please. But why does they call you Booger?
I don't know.
I do that around my house. And even times I do this. Oh, I'm getting tired of Betty. And my daughter's like, who the fuck is Betty?
Who's Betty?
Tired of that ass, Takashi. Oh, I see your point. What, Takashi?
I'll just blurt out. Focus, Lamar.
All right. Let's move it along. As we always do, we don't go forward. We go backwards first. We had a poll. How'd that go?
Yes. Yeah, so last week we did the Reels channel, which fucking nobody can find. And you know what? We tag Reels on Twitter and everything. We never heard one word from them because we're trying to get the word out there that they need to do a better job of getting their product out there. But we did the Kiss frontmen Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley documentary. So the poll question was a simple one. Who is your favorite frontman out of the two?
You just sound like you're about
who is your daddy and what does he do?
How many of you were born here in Astoria?
Come okay, on. Now how many of you here were not born in Astoria?
Raise your hands. All right, how did the poll go?
To no surprise, Paul dominated, 67% Paul. Yeah, I get that. I mean, I'll be honest, I guess I was surprised that Paul didn't get more.
There you go.
Yeah.
People. You know,
yeah, all the comments here are big time supporting of Paul. You know, we had one guy, Andrew Waller. I went with Gene. He's more interesting on stage. Paul's stage persona is too cheesy for me. Okay. Okay.
Is she a Kiss fan?
Oh, I know. He might not be. Yeah, so that was Paul. Everybody loves Paul. And the comments came out in support of Paul too, not Gene.
Yeah.
And then a couple of episode specific ones. Vet Halen said, interesting show. I never knew Gene had polio as a kid. Looking forward to the episode. Shout Out Loudcast is the grown up version of Saturday morning cartoons and cereal. I'll take that. That's a great compliment. Oh, and then our buddy King Cusano. Fucking Judy Ho. And then we had a little bit of an incident here with Superfan Dave.
Oh, no.
Oh, because nope, didn't watch it. Gene is not a frontman.
Whoa.
And then we had somebody on Twitter. I don't think this is a real person, but their Twitter handle is Pandemic Paul. And he responds. Hey, super fan, that is a ridiculous statement. He's the only one of them that can still sing, and he sings their anthem and their most famous song as good as ever. Now do Paul.
Ooh, I thought it'd be like an insult, but I mean, that's pretty accurate for him to say that then.
And then Dave fights back. Hey, he says, hey, super fake. Oh boy.
That is a George Costanza jerk store fucking comeback.
Hey, super fake. The Kiss store called. They're running out of you.
Oh no. So what did he say? Hey,
so then fake? He said, you're gonna call Gene a liar next. I said zero about abilities or lack thereof. I said Paul is the front man. Period.
Okay.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine.
Did the war end there?
No, because then pandemic. No, because I like how you keep asking to see if this is going to end.
Because I don't have it in front of me. You're reading it.
Because then pandemic Paul says, yeah, Gene is being nice. Gene is kind and gives compliments to other members of KISS, past and present. Now do Paul, you know, the guy who can't sing anymore. Come on.
That is funny because that is like that. That's a new fucking now do Paul.
Yeah. That's that. And then it ended there. So ended. Yeah, it ended. Oh. Our buddy Jace430, also known as Jason Worden. He says, I just resubscribed to Reels so I can watch them listen to the podcast. I'm definitely a hashtag kissedhard. All right. Wow. Well, then we got a good one from Skivvies. He says the reenactments are priceless. Oh, and then we got a new listener here. This is Amber Pickering. She says, holy shit, I am listening and crying over the pizza. Awesome podcast. New listener here from the UK. Woohoo!
Yeah! Welcome.
All right, Amber.
Now,
thank you.
I think she's referring to the fact that we said that when Paul is flying on the rig across, he's going to have the pizza oven on a rig in front of him.
And he's gonna throwing out slices at people.
He's burning people, throwing hot slices of pepperoni.
He's dropping fucking shredded oregano over the fucking crowd.
Throw up some parsley.
God damn it, Starchild just burned me.
Starchild burned me. Fan would be asking for it.
Oh, then we got Brian Rita. He says, I already watched it. To be honest, it's the same thing any diehard Kiss fan already knows. Besides, they get stuff wrong, like always. Yeah, Brian, we're not going to disagree with you. It's nothing breaking. It's fun to just watch these things, just break them down.
Just the old days on the VH1 shows, hint, hint, the guy coming up next.
Exactly.
Those were like fun. Bubblegum kind of like you watch it and they're like, yep. Pass the time away. You flick through the channels, you see it, and you know what? You stay on it.
Yeah, because you want to see, especially now that we know that Reels does the horrible reenactments. That's more entertaining than anything. So that's Twitter. What do you got on the Book of Face?
Yeah, Tom, I'm going to zip through this stuff because I do want to get to it.
Yeah.
Let's go over to Loudcasters.
Okay.
Justin Steele may have my favorite comment of the week, though.
Absolutely. Yes.
He just said, John Musachias.
That it might be one of the biggest inside jokes in SIOL history.
One of us, it could have been you or me, wrote Musachias.
Yes.
It's the stupidest thing. I don't know why. This is like 30 years ago humor that we did this at college, Tom.
This
we
was freshman year. Yeah,
we found the fact that the guy repeating his name back to him was the funniest thing. I don't get it.
My name is John Musachias.
Musachias. Musachias.
It's like, you know, like sometimes when you write something down and you're saying it as you're writing it, yeah. It's almost like he's like, Musachias. So dumb.
Anyways, here we go.
Uh-oh.
Matt Wallace.
Which, by the way, before you read this, I want to give a special shout out to Matt Wallace. Matt Wallace sent me a personal DM to my page.
Oh, that's great.
No, it wasn't show related. It was just a nice little private conversation. So I want to give him a little shout out. Now get back to his stories about taking shits or whatever he does.
I don't know if I'm happy that he didn't DM me personally or that I'm upset. I don't know.
Don't be upset.
Here he is. The Reels episode on Kiss Frontman was just generic from what I can see. Unlike listening to the episode of Shout It Out Loudcast. As I listened to the show, I was eating breakfast.
Here it comes. I told you.
I had 69 packs of cinnamon swirl oatmeal. About halfway through the episode, I felt a strange sensation in my lower abdominal region. I quickly ran to my favorite place in the house, stripped my pants off, and sat on the toilet. All 69 packs of oatmeal came shooting out of me like a fire hose. The now fudge and blood infused second hint oatmeal nearly reached to the top of the toilet. I was grateful that I didn't release that into my dungarees. Oh no, not the dreaded stick in the mud. What's a stick in the mud, you ask? That is where you lean forward to pick something up while you're on the toilet and your meat stick.
What the fuck?
Plunges deep into the contents of the bowl. Well, I gotta go get a Q-tip to clean some of the chunks out of my pee hole. Talk to you later.
I don't want to know how long it takes him to come up with these.
Or worse, that they're real.
That stick in the mud. See, now I got a bigger headache. Thanks, Matt. Oh, from fucking laughing. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Over on YouTube.
Uh-oh.
YouTube.
Devin Dungan. Great episode, guys. Haven't gone around to giving this a watch, but at some point I'll check it out. I saw Breaking the Band episode and it was pretty much whatever to me, but at least we got docs on Kiss and other classic rock bands like this.
That's true. Good point.
John B. Good. I can remember seeing Kiss as far back as January 1973. Back before Paul had established himself as a true frontman. At this particular show, Peter had his drum kit moved to the front center of the stage, and he smoked Marlboro Reds and drank Old Crow bourbon between songs. It was confusing at times when Peter would start his crowd raps, because half the time he was threatening the crowd or telling them the directions to a Vietnamese rub and tug.
Oh.
Towards the end of the show, after Peter had threatened to leave the band, if an audience member didn't pass him a plate of Coke with copper spoon, Paul and Gene grabbed both sides of the drum kit and pulled it as far back as possible as they could. And Starchild took his place, and with a twinkle in his eyes, he screamed, "How many people here like to boogie? Ace, you want a boogie?"
Oh, God.
Oh. All right. Ugh. Mr. Antonio 2005. A friend of mine said during the real show that they had the following commercials that ran after the first segment. Paul Stanley promoting his new pizza pockets with extra goat cheese. Next, KTEL Records presents Ace Frehley Sings the Ballads. And includes a wicked cover of Peter Criss' By Myself. Oh. By Myself.
Oh, God, no.
And last, but certainly not least, Gene Simmons announces the new limited edition Kiss wigs. You can save 30% if you order both the 84 Animal Eyes and 87 Crazy Nights Demon package. And you also receive a private virtual lesson from Gene on how to position the wig for the right look and feel for that someone in your life.
Nice.
Oh,
well done.
Emmanuel Martins. Hi, guys. Thanks for reading my email on the show. Great episode, by the way. Unfortunately, Reels is not available here. But after your comments, it doesn't matter anymore. Cheers.
That's a great one. I love it.
Montreal Voots. Super episode, guys. Enjoy hearing your thoughts regarding initial downfall of the band. I think Tom nailed it with the release of Dynasty in 79 with I Was Made for Loving You single being greater variable than the solo albums and the movie in 78. To a 9-year-old Kiss fan like me, 1978 was a magical year and the band's faces were everywhere, not just in pure record stores, Sam the Record Man, but even more so all over the music department of the large Sears stores your parents would drag you to on Saturday morning to buy more white tube socks and butter cookies on sale. Oh. Brother and his friends were 16. I would always be listening, talk, and argue about music as they were going to all the rock shows paid for by scalping extra tickets. It was Kiss versus Zeppelin versus Sabbath. I can remember that once Dynasty was released, the argument quickly became one-sided since Kiss was now disco. Then half of these guys were wearing disco socks t-shirts or had patches on their Levi's jackets. You would hear, "Look at Gene's face on the cover. Even he's freaking out that they made a disco album. Ha ha, they suck." And to a 10-year-old, saying you're a Kiss fan all of a sudden became a lot less cool, especially since Van Halen 1 and 2 was playing nonstop on the FM rock station, while I Was Made for Loving You was part of the dance music mix on AM. Releasing that cartoonish cover for Unmasked just fed the Kiss is for kids talk, while Ozzy was clutching a cross and Angus was sprouting horns. And then there's the concept album. Thanks a lot, guys, for keeping us entertained. Keep up the awesome 2022.
Wow, that's great. Thank you. That's really good.
Yeah. Now, let's go to our buddy, Marty White.
Uh-oh.
I was hungry the other day, so I decided to try a pizzeria that opened in town. It's called Isano's, which sounds like the Italianized version of Ison.
Oh, God.
It was an odd place. Whenever the door opened, the staff was alerted by a brief clip of Soul Station's Ooh Child. Suddenly, a guy looking like an uncomfortable cross between Hillary Clinton and Joyce DeWitt approached and said, "Welcome. Let me take you to your station.
Oh,
will you enjoy the soul of pizza?" I ordered a simple pepperoni pizza, but when it came out, the cheese and the sauce were only on half the pizza. 7 pieces of pepperoni were carelessly tossed, completing what looked like a pizza only a crooked person would eat.
Oh, nice.
I asked Joyce if I could see the cook. He said, "I'll get him for you." He curtsied and got the chef. A short, rude guy came back with Joyce. What do you want, fucko?
No. Yeah.
I asked him why he thought it was okay to serve such a sloppy pizza. Look, fucko, that's the way we make them from here. The owner is particular.
Ah, nice.
Before we could say more, ooh, child sounded, and we all turned as a Muppet-looking dude staggered in vomited.
Oh, my God.
Without taking a pause to acknowledge the vomit, he said, I need a slice of pepperoni and a mellow yellow. I also want an application. I want to be your driver. The short guy went over to the Muppet and said, why do you want to work here, fucko? I turned to Joyce and asked, why do you work here? Joyce blushed and said with a curtsy as he turned away, the chef has a 9-inch cock.
Oh, my God almighty. These are our listeners.
These are our listeners.
Oh, man.
This is our crowd.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Tom, that's what I got. What do you got?
All right. Before we get to a couple emails, I just want to read a new DM that we got on Facebook.
Woohoo!
This comes from Kevin Linton. He says, good morning, guys. I just discovered your podcast a couple months ago, and I have a question. This is not going to be question of the week, but I just wanted to fire it off here. So it says, I'm listening to the Real Show episode now, and I got to thinking about the band's costumes. In 1978, they had the Alive 2 costumes, and yes, they were awesome. But looking back now as a guy in my 50s, do you think we should have seen them as getting softer as far as their look goes? Paul was wearing a blinged out tux jacket with tails. Ace had the big silver chess piece with sequins. Gene looked awesome and Peter looked good, but not as tough, in my opinion, as he was before. Do you think now that the Dynasty costumes were such a far stretch as the next step for the band, as they seem to be toning down their look? Love the show. Thanks for your time. Kevin, thank you for reaching out and discovering the podcast. That's awesome. We appreciate it. That's a great point. We're going to talk about costumes a little bit more as we start breaking down tours, but quickly, I'd never really thought of that the way you broke that down with the blinged out tux and tails and stuff. Very interesting, but we appreciate that. Thank you so much, Kevin. Very cool stuff. Thank you. And let's blow through a few quick emails here. This comes from Anthony, also known as Rush's Lee Lifeson Pert. Peart. Hey, guys, for the quick little discussion you had on Dynasty during the episode, and you said I was made for loving you, alienating fans. Tom, I think the musical landscape was changing. Can't help but wondering if Charisma and I Was Made for Loving You were swapped and they released another song besides I Was Made as the first single and Something All Rockin' instead. The album's first side could have been Charisma, 2000 Man, Sure Know Something, Dirty Living. That's a great rock side. Open side two with I Was Made for Loving You instead. Doing it this way would maybe not be such a disco shock to start off the album and turn people off immediately. Back then, it wasn't uncommon, if I remember correctly, to have a single as a side two opener. Just some thoughts, Anthony. Yeah, we've talked about that before. That's a great point. You know, I Was Made for Loving You was the hit, but if they release something a little different, yeah, who knows? But interesting. When we get to Dynasty review, we'll talk about it. And I want to give a quick shout out here. We got an email from Tim. He says, here from Australia, just recently discovered your podcast. I really like it. I love your honesty and free-flowing fun you guys are having, and damn, you guys are funny. What I've heard so far, I totally agree on everything you guys say about current Kiss. I'm going through and listening to all your past episodes. So one of the reasons why I wanted to give Tim a shout-out with this email is he runs a Twitter page called Kiss Remasters, and he's in the middle right now of working on an alternate Alive 2. And he has some sample videos and stuff. So highly recommend it. If you're on Twitter, it's at Kiss Remasters. So check that out. He's doing some really good work. He kind of gave us like a little explanation of how he's putting together Houston 77, Largo 77. He's syncing up remastered audio. So he's pretty skilled at this, and he's doing a really nice job. So check that out at Kiss Remasters on Twitter. So that's cool. And then we got an email here from Juan Garza, Johnny G, who you'll hear from again, says, hey, fuckos. It's taken a year, but I'm finally getting around to emailing you. You jokers crack me the F up. Let me warn you now. I'm going to be all over the place with this first email to you guys. It may come across as an airing of my grievances. First off, I love the fact you guys don't take anything too serious and praise as well as condemn the band when you guys feel like it's needed. Other Kiss-ass-related podcasts could learn a thing or two from you guys. Ooh, okay, thanks. Fellas, your impressions are great, especially when doing Ace talking about pizza in Mellow Yellow, which you just heard. Next, Stanley Eisen, a.k.a. Pandemic Paul, a.k.a. Picasso Puss, drives me effing crazy. Most days, I just wish that he would get a flat tire while out riding his bike and end up at the same bike shop that Arnold and Dudley ended up in at different strokes. Jesus Christ almighty, no. Then he goes and writes a skit about what it might be like. Boy. Then he continues. Observations as after listening to random SIOL casts. Eddie Trunk. Did you know he signed Ace to a record deal at Megaforce Records and that he hangs out with Sebastian Bach and that he wrote a set list for Cheap Trick and then he has a second home in Vegas and that Ace went to his wedding? Also, isn't it great how Binky, a.k.a. Shakes the Clown, got Ace his gig in Kiss? Gee, thanks, Binky. What did the folks at Reels compensate you with for that compelling interview? A 40-ounce bottle of Old English? Then he goes, I told you I was going to be all over the place. Okay, now it's time for me to sign up to be a Patreon. Awesome. We'll get into that. So that I can get on the big news you guys have been touting for the last year. What's going to happen first? The big Patreon news will be revealed, or all the Kiss-tards will finally get their Dubai Live in the mail. Time to sign off. My keyboard is getting more of a workout than Sonny Pooney's CPAP machine. Thanks for letting me bust your balls. I'll be checking in again soon. Keep up the great work, Johnny G. Oh, man, that was a great one. And then we're going to finish off with this one from the great Angelo Capasso. Subject line, Marvel movie ending. You know how it's a must to sit through all the credits when watching a Marvel movie because there is always a great teaser waiting for you? Well, once again, you two are hitting it out of the park. I love the little 3-minute small talk you both were having about Tom in the interview at the end of the cast. Very creative. I love how you guys continue to push the envelope and make your podcast no doubt the best Kiss podcast out there. Keep throwing us those curveballs. You really smash them out of the park. Angelo, you are the best, my friend. And thank you for that wonderful email. And for that, you are this week's comment of the week.
Good answer. Good answer. I like the way you think. I'm going to be watching you.
Yeah, Angelo, you join a very small class of two-timers of comments of the week. Thank you, absolutely. Angelo. Your comments are always welcomed and always appreciated. Thank you
absolutely.
Again.
Absolutely. It was great. Excellent. Yep.
And Tom, before we move on to Kiss World, we'd like to give a shout out to all our Patreon fans and subscribers.
Yep.
Patreon is where people can join and contribute to our podcast, help us out. And with that, they get some perks. We have different tiers where you can get certain things at certain levels. We obviously have four levels because there are four characters. We've got the Catman, the Spaceman, the Star Child, and the Demon Tear. Take a look at them. See if any of them interest you. See if that's something that you want to help with. And if you can, we appreciate it. As a matter of fact, we'd like to give a quick shout out to our newest actual Patreon subscriber. And that is Johnny G. Johnny G, who we just read an email from.
That's right.
I believe that's him.
It's him.
And much appreciated, John, for joining up. He joined us right now as a spaceman tier. We appreciate that, Johnny. Thank you. We hope that you'll enjoy being on the Patreon. You came on at the right time because Patreon members are helping us with the ARC album review crew episodes, selecting one of our albums to do when it comes to their turn. And also they will be helping us and contributing to the Kiss March Madness tournament, which will be coming up shortly. And obviously, mm-hmm. you know, that stuff is always a ton of fun. So all the Patreon subscribers, they will be part of it. So Thank you for all our Patreon family. And if you are interested, you can find information on the episode notes. You can go to patreon.com or you can find the app Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And then look for creators and you would punch in Shout It Out Loudcast and you'd find us. Take a look, see if that interests you. And hopefully you'll come on board. We know we really love having you guys.
Absolutely. You guys are the best. Patreon guys, we love you. Johnny G, thank you so much. We appreciate the Patreon support at the Spaceman level. And of course, your great email that we just read. You guys are the best. And like we said, there's a lot of fun stuff coming up. March Madness is right around the corner. You guys will be getting hearing from us soon about what your role will be. And of course, the ARC participation is going to be coming up in a few months when we get back around to that part. And you guys are the best. We just can't thank you enough. So thank you. And a special shout out to Johnny G this week.
Yeah. Tom, what's going on in Kiss World?
All right. There's a couple big things, but the big thing that got everybody fired up, especially us two here and more specifically Zeus, is that the original Catman, Peter Criss, has been confirmed to appear at Creatures Fest. Wow. Okay. We're going. We already got our tickets. We got our hotel. Everything's booked and ready to rock. So this is going to be pretty insane. You are going to have Peter, Ace, Vinny, Bruce. You're also going to have our buddy Jericho. His quarantine band is going to be it. This is going to be an absolutely insane Kiss weekend, and we can't wait. And seeing Peter at it was just mind-blowing.
More importantly, you will have Shout It Out Loudcast there.
That's also true. Yes. Exactly. Yep. And then we got a couple of announcements for Kiss being part of some festivals this year. Two of them are really awesome. One of them, I am not lying, I actually would love to go. And that is the Aftershock Festival in Sacramento, California, first week in October. Just for me personally, an unbelievable lineup. Kiss is one of the headliners on Friday. So that Friday headline, you got Judas Priest, Kiss, Lamb of God. But then you also got bands like Foo Fighters, Shinedown, Hailstorm, Rob Zombie, Slipknot, Stone Temple Pilots, a band I love, Chevelle, Evanescence, just all different kinds of genres, just an unbelievable four-day festival. So if you're interested in that, you can check it out. The website is aftershockfestival.com. And then Kiss was also just announced to be part of Download Festival, which takes place over in the UK. That's in June. A lot of similar bands from the Aftershock Festival. Kiss is going to be headlining in the Friday, June 10th. You got a big mix of genres here. Saturday, you got Iron Maiden with the Deftones, Shinedown. Sunday, you got Korn, Volbeat. Then there's a second stage. It's going to have Megadeth, Steel Panther, Mastodon, The Darkness. Just tons of bands. These festivals are outrageous. So big news for Kiss being part of that. And then another thing that I saw today was that Ace Frehley is going to be performing at two separate festivals in Sweden. Those are at the end of July. He's going to be performing with Wasp and the Struts at one of them. And then Wasp is actually going to be at both of them. So any of our Swedish fans looking to see Ace will be in your neck of the woods at the end of July. So check that out. You can get more of those details at waspnation.com for those two festivals.
This is Ace Frehley.
Frehley.
Now, also,
uh-oh.
There was a picture going around of Ace with some friends on the couch. He looks like the body from Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Like someone's holding him up that he's been dead for a corpse for 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, he's slumped to one side. His face, there's no facial expression.
And he's got his sunglasses on.
Oh, yeah. It's Weekend at Frehley's.
Hey, guys, I'm just going to take a fucking nap. I've had too much fucking Cracker Jacks and pizza.
That sugared soda. I told you I want Mellow Yellow Zero.
It needs to wake me up. I'm fucking crashing on the couch. He's a fucking mess.
Total fucking Muppet. He is our own Keith Richards. The fact that he's alive, God bless him, and I hope he continues to live and thrive and perform, but wow.
Hey, this is Ace Frehley. Oh, Paul had some inspirational fucking bike ride tweets too.
Go ahead. Good God.
No, it's all right. You know, he had some close up facials for his bike ride.
And his fucking stupid gloves.
He loves the 10 speed biking. God bless Paul.
Such a rock star. Such a rock star.
It's all good. We love them all. Anyway, Tom, that's what's going on in Kiss World. And before we go further, I'm gonna see if Ace is awake on the couch, so he can take off his boots and see some of those Ace socks.
All right, so we're back. So Ace is still sleeping, but I was able to grab a little small slice out of the Paul Stanley pizza oven, so we're good to go.
Yeah, Paul Stanley. Paul Stanley. Tom, so this week we have Hal Sparks, the comedian, on.
Yep.
And I follow him. He's a little political, but I like him. But you know what? And as he says, it doesn't matter. Everyone can have an opinion, but treat everybody with respect. But more importantly, you know, over time, I found out what a huge Kiss fan he was. Mm-hmm. And I found a lot of his sayings and what he talks about and stuff fascinating. I love hearing about, you know, other people that are in the entertainment business and what they, and if they have a passion for Kiss, I love hearing about it.
Yep.
To you know, us, we thought he'd be fascinating to have him on, have a nice discussion. And like anybody we bring on, Tom, we're always pleasantly surprised. And we could have talked for hours more. And hopefully we'll have him on again and talk some more stuff. We did get into some stuff. We took some detours here and there, but we enjoyed it. And we hope that you will too.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great. Yeah. And just to, before we hit play on the interview, just a quick disclaimer here, so you guys aren't confused when you listen to the interview. Hal pulled a Paul Stanley special and kind of got a little confused talking about Harder Than Hell and Rock and Roll Over. So the conversation just was flowing. So we're not going to start interrupting him and say, no, it's on this album. No, it's on that album. We knew what he was trying to say. And we're, you know, just so, because we know the Kiss tards out there are going to be like, oh, I can't believe, how did you not stop the interview right there and correct him?
Yes. There is no mashup album of Strange Ways, I Want You,
yeah,
and Making Love. Yeah. That's all good, man.
But it happens to the best of us. Like, we've heard Paul Stanley. This one's off Rock and Roll Over. It's called War Machine. It happens.
We have the 2003. We have the Rock the Nation one where he's like, this is off Rock and Roll Over. Christine 16.
Exactly.
What? Yep. Blasphemy. Yep. But regardless, let's get to this interview with Hal Sparks. Stand-up comedian, actor, musician, the lead singer of 01 and the Van Halen tribute, Nerd Halen, coming right off of the Monsters of Rock cruise. And he also has infotainmentwars.com. That's that live stream that he does. Mm-hmm. And in addition, he's got a very popular YouTube channel. He's all over the place. You've seen him on all those VH1 specials. I love the 70s, 80s, 90s, all of those. He's on my daughter's favorite show growing up, Lab Rats. He's been on Queer as Folk and plenty of other places. The one and only.
We got a little surprise for you tonight. We're going to turn the microphone over to
Hal Sparks. We got stand-up comedian, actor, musician, lead singer, Nerd Halen, 01. What's the other one I wanted to say there?
Infotainmentwars.com. Yeah.
What is that called again?
Infotainmentwars.com. Yeah. We don't need documents.
The one and only Hal Sparks joins us today. Hal, thank you for coming on.
Hey,
Hal, welcome,
me.
Buddy. This is great. Yeah. Thank you for coming.
Oh, my pleasure. As a lifelong Kiss fan, hashtag Kiss fan for life, it's a joy to be here.
Thank you. We're gonna have some fun here. We said before we started going live here. Every one of our guests, Zeus gives you the Murph question treatment. Murph is my college roommate, friend for life. He was our very, very first guest. So we have gone from childhood friend guest to Hal Sparks guest.
Yeah. So that's amazing.
This is pretty amazing. We're pretty excited. So
I'm very impressed. I'm very happy for you guys that you've reached this pinnacle.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
It's amazing.
If you knew Murph, you would wonder why, you know why we're saying it's a big leap. So
I know me and that's enough. You know what I mean?
Perfect.
We like to tell the kids, reach for the stars. Your dreams can come true.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, pretty simple. Now these questions could be answered with right now or growing up or forever. Your favorite KISS member?
Paul Stanley. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Favorite KISS song?
Oh, that's tough. That's
right now,
very tough.
Growing up, whatever.
I would say I've Had Enough Into the Fire has done more good for me in my life than almost any other song.
Wow.
Off of Animalize. It was like right at the right point. I was 14 years old about that time. I just made the decision to move from Kentucky to Chicago to live with my dad, even though I probably would have rather lived with my mom at the time, but I needed to get out and try to, you know, see what life could bring me. And it was a scary proposition. And that was one of those songs that just lyrically, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, but literally was a driving force in me standing up and being myself and feeling confident about my choices and my sense of adventure. And it was, you know, it was one of those songs that, like, you know, I packed up all my stuff in my car when I graduated high school, 16 days after I graduated, and drove to LA to be a comedian and an actor. And, you know, everybody's telling you it's not going to work and you're going to be home in 6 weeks and that's, you know, it won't work out. And that's one of those songs that's always been kind of an arrow in my quiver and in the confidence that I have in my own ability and stuff. And I have Paul to thank for that. Now there's a bunch of other songs that have meaning for me, like Going Blind and Reason to Live and Strange Ways, All Hell's Breaking Loose, Exciter. You know, there's certain songs, especially the ones that are like really like I'm the shit kind of songs. I found really serviced me as a human being, kept my head above water when the whole world's telling you, you can't, you won't, and you'll never make it. Nice. And that's one of the best gifts that KISS ever gave me. Cause if it wasn't for those guys, I'd probably be pumping gas in Kentucky right now.
Wow.
So yeah.
Yeah. I call some of those songs, the Water Boy, You Can Do It. Those KISS type songs, right?
That's right. And they're absolutely, you know, that's absolutely true. And I mean, God of Thunder, you know, is one of the kind of early prototypes of those songs because it's all about ego and self aggrandizement, which has value, again, when the world tells you you're crap all the time, which it will spend an inordinate amount of time doing. But then, I mean, then you get into the whole like, there'll be a list of 100 songs by the time we're done. I'm sure we'll discuss them. So
That's fine. So then you go to what's your favorite album?
That's tough.
That's why we always give you the out with right now. You know, right now I'm in the mood for this.
Well, yeah. Right now I've been listening to Lick It Up a lot, the album all the way through.
Good choice.
Yep.
But there, you know, there are periods of time where Asylum, you know, has carried some heavy weight over the years, surprisingly enough. And then I love Revenge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Smart man.
So you find yourself leaning towards the non-makeup 80s, 90s stuff more, you'd say?
Not necessarily, no. I just think as they're depending on what I'm listening for.
Gotcha.
Like what I'm seeking in the music.
Okay.
And I find like Hotter Than Hell, for example, like I Want You is one of the greatest songs ever. And it's, and the fact that Paul wrote it as a joke, literally as a setup and punchline about like John Denver songs.
Oh, the beginning you're talking about.
Yeah. No, he meant that to be a screw you to the 70s singer-songwriter, la-di-di-da, in the morning I raise my head, and I'm thinking of days gone. You know, he's messing with those people. It's not a legit lyric, and there's something really gorgeous about that fact. And then, like, it's just like a big this, you know? And And that, you cannot devalue that in my life. And then again, that's got Strange Ways on it. It's got Going Blind on it. It's got Making Love on it, which was a big crucial song in my upbringing too. You know, so that's a, you know, that's an anchor album for me as well.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what do you think the phrase "dance all over your face" means? Because I think Chris, when we had Jericho on, it took us a while to explain it to him.
We had to explain it to Chris. So he, yeah. I don't think he got it at first. When we
and
told
then he
her.
Used it, and when he was commenting,
I'm
going to
dance,
right,
all over your face,
right. Well, the it's really about after you're broken up with someone, and you're out, you know, getting some scattered ass around town and trying to find your bearing again, having makeup sex and all that kind of stuff. You know, that's what I'm, you know, that's what you're picturing on the dance floor, or you're picturing while you're in bed or whatever. Like, all of this is, you're going to be aware that I'm out messing about. You're going to see that, that I'm getting laid and I'm moving on.
Yeah. Okay. So we think Gene's worse. We just think he's talking about jizzing on your face.
That's
nope. No, I think he means the whole thing, like, because if he wanted to say that, he would have come up with a more direct.
That's what we try to convince.
We're
everyone.
Convinced that's what Gene means.
That's the genius right. of Gene sure. Simmons.
Yeah, yeah. See, I disagree. And I'll tell you why, because okay. There is a specific sexual aspect to a facial. And
here we go.
It has to do with the lowering of the person, sort of it's not necessarily a negative, especially if the woman is into it or interested.
Of course,
it's not necessarily but the idea is that it's an ego act about the lowering of another person as opposed to the raising of oneself. And if you'll notice, when Gene and Paul do their acrobatics going out, you know, as far as in the live show, where does Paul go? Where does Gene go? Where's Gene go? On the stage show.
To the right.
No, he goes when he
goes up.
When he's lifted.
Oh,
yeah,
he
goes up.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes up into the rafters above everyone.
Yes.
Paul goes out into the crowd for Love Gun.
Excellent point.
That's ejaculating on someone's face.
Yep. That's a great point.
I like it. You get the breaking
right.
down of dance all over your face on this podcast.
Hey, I'm glad to do it. Pick a song. We'll go through it perfect. Piece by piece.
How many Kiss concerts would you say you've gone to?
Well, over. Let's see. Well over 40.
Wow. Okay.
Because what I've been every tour since I was 10 years old.
What's the most recent show you've seen? Have you seen them on the end of the road tour?
Oh yeah, I've seen them twice.
Okay,
I saw them in Irvine, at you know, just recently, and then I saw them their last show before the second to last show before lockdown in 2020, before everything ground to a halt.
Okay,
nice,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Now, favorite Kiss memory of yours?
It's a pretty good one. And I have a lot of good ones. 10-year-old Hal dressed as Paul Stanley, taken to his first Kiss concert. Been a fan since I was 5 years old. Never been to a live concert in my life.
That's awesome.
Wearing dyed black long johns with the chest cut out with rhinestones around them.
Oh, wow.
All makeup.
Do you have a photo of that?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, no, you need to post that.
I've posted it before.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've posted my picture of me dressed that way. And my mom took me to the concert. We got tickets because the guy Kiss filmed all their shows. They were very forward about that everywhere they went. So in some states, you have to get a license to do it. Most states, especially back in the 70s and 80s. And in 1980, when this would have been, my dad was an architect working for the state in Kentucky. And so he would refurbish old historic buildings. He's an expert in that. And so right across the hall from his office was the Film Bureau of Kentucky, the government office for the film office. And the guy who ran it was a hardcore Christian. And when Kiss came, one of the ways that they would do it is they get the permit. And of course they were going to get the permit. The governor wasn't going to let this dude not allow them. And so they just put the permit outside. The guy wouldn't even let their rep come into the office. He was an asshole about it. And at one point this guy goes, "Hey, Sparks, I know that son of yours likes that devil music. We got a couple of tickets. If you want to have them, you can have them." Wow. You know, just an asshole. And so my dad didn't go, but my mom took me, and my mom was hot. And so when we were at Rupp Arena, we had kind of government seats up on the side, not on the floor, but not bad. Right. Yeah. Like what would effectively be the orchestra box seats, one level up in the stadium, two levels down. And my mom was like, "This is crappy seats. We can do better." And there were a couple of scattered seats down front in the rich area, you know, because it was Kentucky, but you know, even at that point, you know, there were like two seats down there. And my mom was like, "I can get us down." She was like one of those macrame 70s halter top kind of things. And so she walked me down there, essentially just right past the dudes, like, "Hey." And I was on Paul's side of the stage, dressed as him, you know, 10 years old, losing my mind at the show. And Paul at one point went like, and it that was a huge deal. It was a huge deal for me as a kid. And it was like, oh, there's a world. Like, it was so huge. It was almost shocking. It was like, there's a world outside this place. And I felt like one of those kids that runs off and joins the circus.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was. It was the runoff. I'm going to join the circus moment. I'm just going to hop on with these carnies and split. And 4 years later, I basically did.
Yeah.
But then years later, I'm in Florida doing stand-up, and I'm on the radio doing press. And the guy goes, "We know you're a big Kiss fan. Paul Stanley's going to be our next guest. He's got an art show he's doing."
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. And my ex-girlfriend from Queer as Folk, when I was living in Canada, had moved down to Florida, and she was there, and I was seeing her. And, we had breakfast, and she went with me to press, and then we were going after. So I'm walking out of the way. I'm like, "Oh, cool. Well, I'll listen." He goes, no, "We mean he's here. He's coming in." And I went, "Oh shit." And I, so I'm like, "Well, I'm not leaving." And I had to explain to her. I'm like, we're waiting until he at least shows up, so I can at least say hi. And I'm like talking about him, and I'm just on the air. I'm talking about what a huge Kiss fan I am and why it matters. Not just kind of the way that we're talking, not that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just this, oh yeah, they're my favorite band. It goes beyond that, you know, to a near religious level experience and a respect I have for Paul on a bunch of fronts. And just, you know, after they brought this up. And so I guess, you know, I always listen to a radio station when I'm on my way in to do press, and maybe he had too.
Yeah.
But I'm standing in the hallway like, which way is he coming? Which is it? And I hear behind me, "Hey, Hal." And I turn around and it's Paul.
And
it was the first words Paul and I had ever said to each other was him calling me by my first name. Wow. And then, you know, in an instant, I'm 10-year-old Hal, in that moment going, you know, this dude inspired me to not just follow my dreams or chase them, but to follow through with them, materially do the work, show up, act as if every show is Madison Square Garden, treat your audience like you respect them and you're proud that they're there, and do every show that way. Don't phone anything in, none of that. And because he's that way, and because he put that in his music and in his interviews and everything I'd ever heard him talk about and fans, it changed the direction of my life. And so I was very proud and happy to be able to say thank you to him in that first exchange. Then, you know, like at one point he like DM'd me on Twitter to see if he could bring his kids to the Lab Rat set, but we were on hiatus and I was like, God,
wow. That would have been so badass.
But
that's funny you say that, Paul, because his kids were into wrestling. That's how Chris met him.
Yes.
Too. And it's a funny thing,
but it's
funny that the two of you, and we always have Chris on, we were talking about him a little bit before we started. It's like Paul is the favorite for both of yours and the showmanship and that kind of, you know, and both of you guys, Chris and you, and are not just oh, I'm not, I'm an actor or I'm a stand-up comedian. That's what I am. No,
yeah.
I can play music. No,
yep.
I can, you know,
write. I can do anything I want as long as I do it. Yeah, I can do whatever I want as long as I do it at quality.
That's, yep. And
that's,
exactly.
That's what matters.
That's from Paul.
Yeah. That's right. 100%. And look, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Gene and his, you know, his drive over the years and his focus on stuff, especially as keeping them afloat during certain periods as an image and the branding aspect of all that. It's very smart. It's great. And I grew up on the original lineup and I, you know, I loved the characters that were there and Ace's, you know, original playing, like his guitar work was just, you know, a one and only in its own way, you know, but Paul is Kiss to me on so many fronts. And if I have to make a tip out of this spear, it's going to be him always.
Yep. Nice. So you just came off Monsters of Rock Cruise not long ago, which we saw some pictures, we saw some videos. Your band Nerd Halen, which is awesome.
Right.
You were performing with some other guys. Saw some pictures of you and Kip Winger.
Yes.
Doing a lot of things on stage. So we just came off last November. It was our very first time finally making it onto the Kiss Cruise for the first time.
Oh, I'm going this year. I'm going to the next one.
That was my.
So we'll hang out and party there then.
I insist.
That's my question, Hal. What's your take on the Kiss Cruise? Have you ever been? Do you want to go? But you're saying you're going to go on the next one.
I have never been available to do it.
Okay.
Every time it's come up, I've either had a reason why I've either been booked somewhere else or I've had a show. A lot of times when you film a television show, it's through the fall and the spring.
Yeah.
And so anything that happens during that time, it would so shit the bed every time, you know, even during Lab Rats where I was like, oh, I've got a couple of weeks off and it's the week before and the week after I'm shooting the week of. And it was like, God. But
yeah, we went with a bunch of our friends who have been on previous cruises and because of COVID and because of the restrictions, the boat was like half empty.
Yes.
Oh, so
we loved
you,
it.
So we loved it. I mean,
yeah,
we had Bruce Kulick's band there. They absolutely blew the roof off it. It was fantastic. And this, and you know, I'm sure you saw the announcement when they announced the booking for the Kiss Cruise that this is the last time they will be performing on the boat
as a group.
Exactly. That's the caveat. So now everyone's wondering what does that mean?
It means they'll either rotate through or they'll do like somebody's going to do an acoustic thing with like Paul will do stuff off his solo record, you know, the acoustic Soul stuff Station. And Gene will perform with his. Yeah. Okay. The Soul Station thing. I don't know that the Soul Station thing will happen because that's a lot of people to bring on that.
Yeah.
I think more than likely it'll be him doing like an acoustic set with his solo, you know, with a little bit of backup. Gene more than likely doing the band he does with Eric Singer when they do military bases and shit like that. They'll bring other people on as specialty things. They'll try and get Vinny or Ace to come out and do part of it. And it'll be a Kiss experience instead of them. And then they'll all jam together on one song or something like that, which won't be the band performing, but it'll be a big event or something, which makes total sense to me. It's just like the end of the road tour is the beginning of the residencies. And that's what it was intended to be. And I've always said Kiss is one of the few bands that could start a live Cirque show, and this has been my plan along. And Gene, if you're listening, and you probably are, he's probably got my house bugged. It's my good idea, you know. But
yeah, that's a good Gene tongue for the people who can't see.
It's pretty good.
That's really good.
Yeah.
You got to do some with the hair a little bit, and you could do
or a little less with the hair, I think.
Yeah.
Like he's got kind of a bob. I don't know. Anyways,
it's a helmet.
But in the end of the road tour, like they could start a Cirque show where they're performing live and the Cirque show goes on around them and then slowly but surely remove themselves from the band if they want to retire. And there's still a performance band there, just like the Beatles love, just like the Michael Jackson show where imposters or impersonators do the role in the show overall. And it goes from live to recorded, but the live band could do it for a good long while.
Mm.
Okay. And it would be a friggin' amazing. Can you imagine? Have you seen? I don't know if you've seen Beatles Love.
I have not,
or any of those kind of shows. They're amazing. They're great. And Ty Tabor from King's X, like comes to Vegas every so often and sees it twice. Like he just needs. He loves. He's such a Beatles fan that he comes and watches the Love thing. And he just Man, I think it's the greatest show you've ever seen in your life. You know, that kind of, he's great. And I think Kiss could do that in Vegas. A Cirque Kiss show would kill.
Well, I mean, that's a unique idea. I like that. I like that idea. That's a unique idea because we always ask everybody what they think about what's going to happen at the quote unquote end of the road, like after they're done touring, you know?
Yeah, I think, I mean, like a classic. I mean, that's what bands used to do anyways. It's singers used to do. It's just, it's what Elvis did. Well, if it's good enough for Elvis, it's good enough for everybody else. Mm-hmm, if you don't want to, and basically, you know, Vegas, I live in Vegas right now. And Vegas is touring standing still. You prefer, you know, instead of going everywhere in the country, you stand still and the country goes by on a conveyor belt in front of you. You're on the same stage every night. And when you've got a rig as big as Kiss does, like there's a, honest to God, if Kiss, U2 and I don't know, Nickelback and who else? Foo Fighters. If they each took a casino and one of the big rigs there and they did four nights a week in the show, rock fans from all over the world would bounce show to show. They'd come and see, they'd come in one weekend, they'd see all the band, one band, their favorite band four times. And then the next time they would come through, they would see each band or they'd see this band and this band twice. And again and a fucking again. I'm just saying.
Because I believe it.
Yeah. And you have all sorts of other stuff, dude. It'd be a playground for it. And they wouldn't have to pack up a giant rig and bring it everywhere, you know, because it would, and it would get better and better as a show because it wouldn't have to be portable.
Right.
No, you're right. You're great right. Point. So I had a question for you. Now, I know you, so you were on Lab Rats, as my daughter can't stop talking to me about. You're on Queer as Folk. Have you ever, in any other program too, ever been able to sneak in a little view, a little Kiss onto? Like, I remember George Lopez on his show, every once in a while, there'd be a little Kiss thing or a little Kiss comment about his love of Kiss. Like, were you able to sneak anything in like that? Like your character not, likes Kiss or something?
Not on those shows. No. But I've worked that into my stand-up over the years a few times.
Okay.
And certainly on the I Love This, I was, it was basically, me and Marilyn Manson and two other people were like the big like Kiss boosters that were on those shows.
Yep.
And so, but, honestly, it's been so aligned with me as an individual because most people know, nobody's surprised to find out I'm a Kiss fan. Like I talk about it on my live stream show with some regularity. I have absolute and undying respect for the fact that these guys have been making music and playing together all this time. And I have zero room in my heart for people crapping on bands and other people's music tastes because it's none of my goddamn business.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I certainly because of how, Kiss has been the butt of jokes over the years here and there that I've maybe got a chip on my shoulder about that. But I'm proud of the fact that it actually made me more resiliently a fan and also more respectful of other people's music choices and stuff. Because as long as it brings you joy and lifts you up, I don't care. Mm-hmm. And I've often said, like, if you're depressed and your life feels down all the time, get some new music, man, because whoever you're listening to is selling you a bill of goods emotionally.
Yep.
And I'm lucky. And, as a Kiss fan, I've never felt that way. So I instead of having that be part of shows I've been on character wise, and I wouldn't rule it out. We'll see if I can do that. Cause I do remember a huge turning point for me too. When I was a kid was we didn't have a TV till I was 15, till I moved to Chicago.
Yeah,
and the only time I would watch TV is at my neighbor's house. It's about a mile and a half away. I'd have to hike over there to watch the Hulk and Wonder Woman, and then at my grandmother's house. At my grandmother's house in Cincinnati, where I was born, but we were raised. That was just the nearest hospital without chickens. Gotcha. We lived in Kentucky, and at my grandmother's house, she would watch TV, and she watched WKRP in Cincinnati came on. And when Randy Travis came in the very first episode, took over an AM talk radio station and turned it back into a music station, and he rolls down the Kiss Bicentennial poster.
Yes.
I was like, this is my show.
Yep.
This is now my favorite television show. As a kid, I was like, that's it. I love this show. sight unseen. And I've always been proud of that choice ever since.
That's awesome.
So I will do that at some point. I think nice. I have to. My goal is on one of the next series that I do over the course of my life, and there will be many, is that I do a scene where I roll down a Kiss poster.
Nice.
You move into a new apartment, just so happen to have a Kiss poster.
That's right. Absolutely. Yep. Just to make that distinction, of course.
So you talked about earlier about you've been listening to Lick It Up lately.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's a question. We like to, like, you hear a lot of people talking about this. It's a very simple question, but a lot of people don't know how to answer it. Okay. We talk about the era from 78 to 82. Okay. That really weird era where, you know, you had Ace leaving the band, Peter leaving the band, you know, they were doing Dynasty, The Elder, Unmasked, all that stuff. Lick It Up comes in and it kind of gets them back, you know, with, you know, well, Creatures of the Night, that was first. Okay. They kind of got their rock back. Okay.
Yep.
People like to ask this simple question. Did Vinnie Vincent save Kiss?
No, Eric Carr did.
Okay. Talk about that.
Eric Carr brought metal rock drums on the level of like old Zeppelin to Kiss.
Okay.
And for a long time, what held Kiss back a little bit was Peter's drumming. While on the one hand, it worked for certain things. His light playing was from a recording standpoint, why they never made any ground until Alive.
Okay.
And then after that, there was a sort of paper drum period where you're not going, unless the drums are whack, you're not going to have the guitars equal to it. So whatever you're doing guitar wise, riff wise, all that stuff is going to dial down to kick and snare. It's always going to be, how do we boost the kick and snare? Well, when Peter's playing overhanded, like the way he would do sometimes in studio, especially, what you're getting is accents, even though they're there, is never going to be the punch that's required for even some of those riffs. And until that was an option, Paul, Gene, as far as riff writing, and then even bringing Vinny in as the co-writer that Gene did on some songs, that wouldn't have worked
without Eric Carr. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You could not lay those riffs. There is no version of All Hell's Breaking Loose or War Machine with Peter's drumming.
Yeah. Even before that, even on The Elder, where Eric, his first real like proper, The Elder takes a beating. But if you listen to a song like The Oath, like Peter's not doing the, that was the first sign that there was something different happening with this band. And we've reviewed The Elder, and it's too bad that album is filled with a lot of,
love that record.
Zeus was going to ask you about that. So
I love The Elder, and I like both Under the Rose is another one of those songs for me that will, you know, bring me out of a funk.
Yep.
And it's so, and again, you needed something, like they were trying to find something that would shake the Etch-A-Sketch that they were stuck in, trying to move away from Ace and Peter and the emotional mix-up of being in that. Because I've been in casts before where the world perception is that everybody's best buddies, and internally it's a shit show. And it's painful, and everybody wants you to like and enjoy working with a certain person or persons, and you know that they are the worst human being you could possibly be around for your own creativity or emotional safety.
And fucking so, Disney people, huh?
Yeah. Well, this predates the Disney folks, because honestly, the being on a kid's show doing comedy is a joy. You know, top to tail.
I can imagine going from Queer as Folk to a Disney show where all the drama you had in the acting was a serious drama.
Yeah. Well, that's why there's a reason why I won't do a dramatic series ever again, a relationship based series again. I won't do
really?
It. I'll do a movie about that kind of stuff, but I'm not doing a series. Like, I believe me, everybody on This Is Us is getting cancer right now. They're making cancer in their body doing that shit.
That's depressing shit.
It's terrible.
It's so bad.
It's so bad. It's terrible for you. It is effectively emotional torture,
yeah.
And it gets worse all the time because it must be more drama. So let's say you're in this situation where it's supposed to be happy. Imagine being in a sitcom where people are that miserable. Meredith Baxter, Bernie, and Family Ties, right?
Right.
She just hates the fact that Michael J. Fox is the star and he goes off to do fucking Back to the Future. And this son of a bitch ruined my, you know, where, and it's just a grind. And here you are, this young, like, this is my show. And everybody's, you know, the woman playing your mom is like, you son of a bitch. You know, like, that's got to suck. When you're in a rock band where you're trying to be, like, this positive force, and then two of the guys, you know, one's had his foot out the door since you saved his ass on his ballad he was going to name Beck.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Big Peter Criss fan, you sound like, Hal.
Well, no, I liked him beforehand, but I don't like that whole, like, I'm miserable. I don't need you. Yeah, I don't need you bastards anymore. Bullshit. When you absolutely did, knock it off.
Yeah.
And you know, true. Gene, I'm sure, has more of a chip, you know, than Paul does. And they go through them. But, like, I recognize the emotional response both of them have to Ace and Peter. I've seen it in myself. I've seen it in other people. I've seen it in pairings that have occurred in shows and the like, where people don't have chemistry and are forced to have chemistry, and then they do for a time, and then they can't escape that chemistry. It's messed up. It's a hard thing to carry.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot with Paul. Like, oh, when are they going to do the reunion, this and this and that? We're like, Paul is like, I don't give a fuck if you tell me Ace can keep up with this shit. I'm not dealing with looking over. Is he sober?
Yes.
Is he going to pick up? Is he late? Right. Is that, when I could just look over at Tommy, and it's not even a thought in my head. He's on time. He knows the songs. He'll perform great. I don't give a shit that, some idiots are like, oh, fake Ace.
Yeah, right.
What's the other one?
And by the way, it's, you know, it's about the feeling, whether you're there having a good time making the music. This is the essence of this very music.
Yeah.
So having a miserable bastard grunting his way through it is antithetical. That's the fake Ace.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
It's a good point.
Just because you're there and you were the guy originally doesn't mean you're still the guy in that regard. Yeah. Nice. Also, I also think that it's the, I went to the reunion tour, you know, many of them.
Yeah.
And I went to, you know, I saw them at Dodger Stadium on Halloween when Smashing Pumpkins opened for them dressed as the Beatles. Like, it was a fucking weird show. And I love the idea, but I saw them when they were in makeup as my first show, real band, original lineup.
Yep.
And then afterwards, you know, through the years, I didn't see them with Vinny. I never saw a show with him.
Okay.
Because while they were on that tour, he got booted and then the makeup came off and then whatever. It was just like weird, you know, this mix of stuff.
Yep.
But in the process, I take it back. I did see them. Yeah, I did see I saw Creatures tour and it was him. He was in the honk.
Yeah, and that's when Paul was like tearing his hair out because he's like, dude, get off the fucking stage. Enough with your soloing shit.
Yes.
I don't give a shit what good of a songwriter you are. If I'm performing with you and you're pulling this shit, I'm not dealing with it.
Right, right. Beat it. It's not, you didn't build this. Stop acting like you did. Do your job and contribute to what you're actually in, not the band you think it should be. Mm-hmm. If you think it should be another band, here's a good idea. Do what Kip Winger and Morgenstern and Paul, I'm a bit blitzing his last name.
Winger guys.
Yeah. They all went off and formed Winger. Do what Slaughter did after they kicked Vinny to the curb.
Oh, well, we always laugh about that. Vinny Vincent's the only guy to get kicked out of his own band.
Yes.
So,
and they were on the Monsters tour. I talked to Dana Strum a little bit. Yep. It was fun. Yep. But, nice. Anyways, I love the early Ace stuff. I love his original solo record. I love Fraley's Comet for that matter. I love the first record, Rock Soldiers, and all that stuff. It was super fun.
Yep.
But I personally believe, and I'm right about this, so if anybody disagrees, the hell with you, that the reunion is what wrecked Paul's voice.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
During the 80s, Paul went from being a barking singer along the lines of like baritone David Lee Roth type stuff to a legit vocal force, mm-hmm. all the way up to Forever. I mean, the peak of his vocal power is Forever. Mm-hmm. And he was right about that time. They're killing it. You know, he really is holding it together, even live. He's doing some beautiful stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they go back and start doing the reunion tours, doing all the original tracks. And because of everybody else and not wanting to change guitars every goddamn song, they start down tuning and chasing the bottom mm-hmm. vocally. And it's why Gene even, you know, could still sing today, but in a lot of ways, it's down tuned so much that he's croaking a lot of the notes because they're so far down on his vocal cords that they're below the note point. They're just flapping at this point.
This is going way over my head. I trust you on this. I'm not.
Okay. So your vocal cords, imagine these are your vocal cords, right? And you tighten them up, and up near the top is where the high notes are, and the low notes are when it's wide open. All right. When you're singing high notes, your vocal cords are very close together and they don't split much and they don't use a lot of air. Ask Sebastian Bach, who always talks like this. You ever watch Sebastian Bach? Dude, he's always talking like this. Okay. That's because he's protecting his vocal cords when he's talking, because when you talk down in your voice like this, your vocal cords split apart and they wag a lot. They soften and they are more susceptible to air and damage. Mm. So lower notes over a while, you become what they call a golden voice when it's the lower stuff. Elvis was this way, and you lose your top notes.
Yep.
You will lose your high notes. And that's why golden voices, they don't have high notes. None
all
of
the
them
country
do.
Singers.
That's right. That's right. They all, and they sound very leathery and they have mm-hmm. a nice quality to their voice, but they can't ever bring them back together because they're effectively damaged. Yeah. And if you try, you'll get nodes because you'll bang them together. All right. Well, Paul was over time tightening his vocal cords up and making them more resilient and stronger. And then they went back to singing these songs where his old vocal technique was shitty in the 70s. And he just did the show. You just do what you do. And it because they lowered the key, it moves it from a place in your vocal cords that's high up here where you need very little air to a lower part of your vocal cords, and your vocal cords widen out where you need a lot of air. So you're throwing night after night, you're throwing gravel and stomach acid and all kinds of stuff through your throat when you sing like that. And you'll get a break in your vocal cords.
Wow.
And that's what's happened. And that's why he's chasing it all the time. Now, I wish he would talk less during shows. And if Gene,
we say that all the time.
Yeah. He doesn't have to do it.
No.
And as
let
a matter
Gene do a couple songs, do an Ace song here and there, throw a Peter song and just hit the ones that you hit that really like, do I need to hear Paul do Say Yeah right now on the end of
no,
the road?
Right. And no. you don't need him setting up every song.
Exactly.
And the fact Gene has been able to sort of protect his voice over the years.
Yep.
For what little he does, because he doesn't do any talking during the live show. Yeah. That? He does like three things and he's done. So, which is a shame because, you know, if you look at like, you know, even Radioactive or any of the songs off his solo album, he had some notes back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yep. Yeah. He's got
not
a
for the innocent.
Voices.
Right. He can go for the high notes and stuff, but he just doesn't anymore because Paul's been carrying this weight for a long time. But the old songs, what happens is you build your song, you're like, okay, my new songs are written in a good key for me. They're great for my voice. They hold it together. They're high notes. They're great. If you took Steve Perry of Journey and made him sing a bunch of New York Dolls songs, he'd never be able to sing again.
Wow.
Because he would basically be throwing gravel and acid through his throat every goddamn night for years. Wow. And so in a lot of ways, Paul, you know, I was joking, Paul needs a year off. And then COVID happened. And I'm like, good.
We said the same thing.
Shut up. Don't say anything. Don't talk to anybody. You know, and when you do talk in the high part of your throat as much as you can all the time. Nobody cares. Nobody will mind.
Yeah. Well, we had the issue with the fact is like, so you're having obviously issues. There's accusations that you're lip singing, whatever, backing tracks and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then in the middle of this, you want to do Motown? Whoa. I'm like, whoa, that's fuck. But then when he talks about it, he explains it all the time by saying, I'm using a different voice. Yeah. I can do this. And yeah. People are like, There's no way you're fucking hitting Smokey Robinson when you can't hit fucking
but you can.
Right off of love.
No, I'll tell you why. Because it is a different part in your voice. It's a lighter, breathier thing.
Yeah.
And it's a gear in your throat that may be above or below his break. And as long as he stays above or below his break without crossing over the break, it'll sound smooth.
Yeah.
Now, the way the Golden Voices did it was they had a break and they never went above it. He can't do that because of the songs that they've made over the years.
Yeah, now, which is why you can't do certain songs on the set list now, because the ones that we throw out, he can't do it. It would be a disaster.
Well, he could if he had, more than likely, if he had vocal surgery and it was successful, and then he took time off and he healed up and then he trained for it. The question is, do you want to be Julie Andrews where they fuck up and cut your vocal cords? You can't do anything anymore. So that's the nervy part. Or do you just swing for the fences, make enough money to pay for your kids to never, ever, ever have to work and their kids to never, ever, ever have to work. And you're just throwing yourself, you're sacrificing yourself and your ability to even speak in your later life so that they, you haven't left any money on the table that's there and you've entertained as many people and you've guaranteed this legacy for a time. And that's what he's doing. And I respect that because
he's selling ripped up carpet from his house and Kiss Tards are buying it. So
it's funny when he
makes enough money as it is.
It's funny when you talk about his voice. First of all, that theory, which after you explain it is unbelievably amazing to think that he blew his voice during the reunion. I never heard that, but your explanation is perfect. And another thing,
another thing that
Zeus and I noticed. So we've seen Kiss a bunch of times on the End of the Road tour. Some of the shows were terrific. Some of them were
mm-hmm.
But on the Kiss cruise, they do an indoor show in a tiny, tiny, like 1,000, 1,500 seat arena.
Yeah.
The band's right in front of you. Paul sounded fucking fantastic because he didn't have to do what you said and throw that voice, 20,000 people deep. It was we kept looking at each other. Said it was one of the best performances.
And vocally the banter, the banter was, hey, Gene, I think Gene forgot a couple lines from this.
Yeah.
When they try to do a couple. What was the song he forgot?
She's So European.
Yeah. And he's joking about it, but he's not screaming it. Hey, people.
Yeah, there was none of that.
He's just doing joking with Gene right next to him. We could all hear him.
Dude, every lead singer will tell you it's the talking that fucks you up. That's why everybody thinks that lead singers in bands are shy and all this kind of stuff. Because after the band comes off stage, the guitar player can yap it up all he fucking wants. But the lead singer's got to watch his throat. That's why everybody thinks, Jeff Tate's mysterious. Because you can't sing like that and talk to anybody.
Right. That's a good point.
You can't do it.
Yep.
And by the way, he was on the Monsters of Rock and sounded fantastic.
Mm.
So, and they're down tuned a touch, like half a step, but not a full step like you see done, which would mess him up.
Mm-hmm.
I learned my lesson the hard way. I was never a trained singer and I was a belter, for a long time. And I have a certain amount of vocal natural talent. Like my vocal cords are resilient and strong and I've been talking my whole life. So I'm able to do more with them than most people. And as a comedian, when you're impersonating people all the time, or you're doing characters, or you're, mixing volumes in front of crowds to make a joke carry or stuff, you have a lot more, you need to have more quivers in your, more arrows in your quiver than most people who perform. Right. So I've learned the hard way when with my band with 01, when I lost my voice like three times, I can't even speak, much less sing. This is scaring me. So I had to go back to square one and go, okay, how do I do what I want to do and still sound full and not just fall back into this, sound like the Bee Gees on stage and then let it all out in the studio, which a lot of people do. And so I had to, I had to rebuild from scratch and go, okay, what would a pro do in this situation? And in learning what that means, one of the biggest moments I had was, first of all, this recognition that Sebastian Bach always talks like this for a reason.
Yep.
But also how much air it took to make a high note, which is this. That's it. Any more air is too much. And so when I see people going, you're like, okay, You're sawing your throat to pieces right now. And all the heat from your voice should come from your mouth and the back of your throat, not your vocal cords.
Yep.
And so once I started figuring out how to do that, and like I said, I've been doing characters my whole life. So, you know, and watching, like I can do Cinderella and old AC/DC, like Brian Johnson, Back in Black, full voiced to this day, pretty easily.
That seems like hard though.
It is if you down tune. This is the thing. I've done this at the Ultimate Jam Night and a couple other things, and I've done it with Steel Panther. If you down tune that at all, if you don't do the original tuning, it will throttle you. It's like taking a cheese grater to your vocal cords. It's terrible. Yep. And that was an important lesson. If you do it in the original key, it fits. There's a gear for it in your voice, like Paul was talking about. But if you lower it a little bit, it's in the wrong spot and you'll grind yourself to nothing. And that's why Brian Johnson, that's the version of the thing where you can do, where he squeezes back in there, because that's the cheater version of it. And he can't do the Back in Black. I hit the sack. I'm better wrong. I'm bad. That's a full voice. Like I can do that without warm up. I can do it for an hour. And as long as you don't overdo it with how much air you're pushing through, you're fine.
Yeah.
But what'll happen is the harder it gets, if you're a little tired one night, you're a little worn out, worse, you've eaten something bad that's going back up on you. That's where acid reflux messes with most singers. You'll get into the bah, 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 hey, hey, you know, and then you're done. And then three shows later, you can't speak.
What do you find is harder to hit for yourself if you're singing? Now, you do Van Halen songs, you do Kiss songs. Have you done any Sebastian Bach? I've heard you do some Sebastian Bach.
Yeah.
We just did Slave to the Grind. Oh, as an album review crew
outside
episode.
Outside my window, there's a whole lot of trouble coming. The cops and killers and the rag cover clones. That whole thing, yeah.
Nice.
Like that whole like note at the top, so good.
That comes out, yeah.
Yeah. I will use, because his voice, he's a real, like a masterclass in heat, which is what you call that kind of garble, the on top of the note versus a clean note, you know? And if my voice is wrecked or a little tired, I tune up to stuff off to In a Darkened Room or.
All right, let's hear it.
In a darkened room beyond the reach of God's faith lies the wounded. The shattered remains of love betrayed and the innocence. Like, all right. So,
nice.
That if I need to get back to the clean version of my throat, it's him and a guy named John Cowan from Newgrass Revival.
I don't know him.
The bluegrass band. And his voice is bell tone pure.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do that. Now, when it comes to Kiss, interestingly enough, my natural singing voice sounds more like Gene at his best than Paul at his best. So when I try to sing Paul songs that are really high, I have to find other ways of singing the notes. And they're closer to what Todd Kearns does.
Mm.
And
Todd's amazing.
Todd's a great guy. He's become a friend.
He's
the
closest thing I've seen to channeling Paul in Kiss.
He was amazing on the Kiss cruise.
Me and Tommy saw him on the cruise and the songs they were throwing out, me and him are like looking at each other like little children. Like, we're never going to hear Kiss play these songs. This was the closest thing. Him and Zach, they fucking killed it.
Yes, killed agreed. It. Yeah. Yep. And Todd, you know, I was introduced to Todd because of a Kiss-related aspect of his performance. His brother is a huge Ace Frehley fan.
Okay.
And they're both Kiss fans, obviously, but they have a band called Static and Stereo. And I don't know if you know this album or this version of things. Well, Todd Kearns and his brother had a band together in Canada called Static and Stereo. And they had a hit on the radio when I first moved up there to do Queer as Folk called Before My Time. And his voice is so great. It's, I won't go before my time. My day has arrived. It's so great. It's just a fucking such a, and it's very Kiss, you know, kind of positive in that way. And you know, and the solo on it, I was like, that sounds familiar. And it, and his brother was copying Ace licks from the first three albums all over the place. And on the back of that record, on the CD, which I bought as soon as I could get my hands on it, he said, thanks to Ace Frehley and all the gods, like that his brother was thanking them. And there's, he even does like the fade out on Love Gun on the end of one of the songs the record, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, I like these guys. I just like them, you know? And so whatever they're doing, I'm in. They're good people. Right.
Yep.
And so I had a Canadian fan who was like, oh, you don't know. He was in a band called Age of Electric. They're big in Canada. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And she mailed me a stack of CDs. Like, here's this whole catalog. It's like eight CDs. And I friggin' love that stuff. And I, so awesome. I've loved Todd for a long time. And I, you know, Canada rocks, just saying. Yep. And seeing a live show in Canada is a joy because they're not as sort of nihilistic and cool as we can be as audiences. So people can just have a good time.
Yeah.
And so I'm, you know, I became a big Danko Jones fan.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then of course Nickelback as well while I was up there. And I just enjoyed seeing live shows up there and I became a big Todd Kearns fan. And then all of a sudden he's playing the Kiss Cruise and doing all this stuff. I'm like, that's nuts. Yep. So it's beautiful. So every time I would see a clip, I'm like, that's my dude.
Yep. And we had him on a couple months ago and we were like, Kiss 2.0, would you take it? And he's like, I'd be honored, but I don't think that's happening. I'm like,
right.
I think
he'd have to curl his hair, but he could do it.
Yeah. I think he would make a great Paul because he doesn't, he's not, it's not like, like just copying him every so he's got his own little aura and it works. He carries that Paul kind of stuff.
Yeah. With Todd's him, a rock star. He's great. Different.
Oh yeah.
He plays, there's a song called Ariana Incomplete that I really love off the Static and Stereo record. And there, and like, if he knows I'm in the audience, sometimes he'll play it. They'll add it to the set. It's pretty cool. I'm sure he tells that to everybody, but, that whole record, I recommend it for people. Go look it up. Static and Stereo. It's, you know, with Todd Kearns and his brother and a couple other dudes. And it's, if you're a Kiss fan, you'll enjoy the record.
That's
you really will.
I'm sure.
Right. Tom.
Yeah. So Hal, we can't thank you enough for the time that you've given us so far. I'm going to finish up with one kind of simple Kiss question because we love to talk about the solo albums, the 78 solo albums. And Zeus and I,
a long time ago.
Thank you. Thank you. We always get into this with our listeners on social media, Twitter and Facebook.
I know what he's going to say.
Because Zeus and I are in the Paul Stanley camp. We love that album.
Yep.
But then we have what we have called the Ace cult.
Sure.
Where they can't, it's the Ace Frehley solo album. And then everything else, you know, is either garbage or mediocre.
Yeah. Right?
Where do you stand on the solo album, including Peter's album, Gene's album, all of them? What's your thought on the solo albums?
For me, it's Paul, Ace, Gene, and then Peter's just falls off a cliff. I'm sorry.
No!
I mean, I like it, but I'm not into Boogie Woogie per se. It says nothing about the quality of the experiment for him. It's just not my kind of music. You know what I mean?
Okay.
If he'd put out a legit bluegrass album, I could respect the content of it without being caught up in it. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Same thing. That said, Paul's was a Kiss record.
Definitely.
Ace's was a close second. Gene's was a great experiment in the character that he plays. It was a broadening of what was possible, which it was necessary because he was more than any other character. He was getting narrow cast. Right now, Ace has had that problem in that everything has to say space in it at some point almost. And it's become like his own little sci-fi series on the side.
Yep.
But the Paul album, I mean, just Goodbye alone.
Yeah. Love it.
Is such a, like a beautiful and powerful song in a way that there is no emotion to any of the Ace songs.
Oh, God, no.
None. I mean, it's great. They're fun songs, and I enjoy them. And, In Need of Love is probably the closest that he gets to actually emoting vocally on the
record. Is that what he's doing on that song?
I don't know what the hell he's doing.
I'm in need of love.
But that whole, like, I want some love, so give me some. Like, he's you know, it's like out of your minds on out of your mind on drugs, but at the same time,
exactly
meaning what you say, and that's fine.
Yeah,
the Gene songs are well performed and enjoyable, and the most emotional song on there is clearly When You Wish Upon a Star.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
But all of Paul's songs contain genuine rock singing emotion.
Oh,
all
yeah.
of them. The whole record.
Take Me Away, Together as One, and Tonight God. You Belong to Me are unbelievable.
Yes. It's like agreed. Yes, yeah. I agree. Yep. On a scale that the other guys can't even touch.
Yep.
And like I said, I love like Rip It Out and those things. They're great rock songs.
Yes.
However, there's a category where I'm like, as much as I'm used to hearing them the Ace way, I almost wonder what it would be like if somebody else had done them. In the same way that Peter took Strange Ways, and if Ace had sung it, it would have been kind of dead in the water.
Mm.
And Cold Gin, same thing. Like mm-hmm. Cold Gin's an Ace song, but Gene doing it gave it some depth that it wouldn't have had otherwise.
Mm.
And that's been a problem with Ace's singing forever. Now, if you look at him, he was the Joe Walsh of Kiss in a lot of ways. The same vocal tonality.
I do those impressions too. Joe Walsh and Ace, that voice is not too far from each other. It's
that's
a little fucked up, if you know what
that's
I mean.
That's right. You got to find the same spot. Yeah. Hey, Carly. But that's, you know, in the city. Right, right. But you can tell that that's where Ace kind of cut his teeth and why where his value was in the band. It was like, okay, the Eagles are killing it, and you kind of sound a bit like Joe, and you're the guitar player. This is not a bad fit overall. Yeah. from a Gene marketing standpoint, makes a lot of sense. That said, you know, as much as I love those songs, there's a lack of emotionality to them that just makes them guitar songs. Still, they might as well be instrumentals.
Totally. That's a great point.
Yeah, Torpedo Girl doesn't really move you emotionally.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
yeah. Not as much as Talk to Me, anyways.
Oh, God.
Because I just need a little conversation, man.
Yeah. I love Unmasked.
All
come
I
on.
Want is... I do, too.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No. Zeus hates it.
Shandy.
That's Zeus's all-time worst song. Kiss song.
Is That You?
Love it.
No.
Great album.
You're All That I Want by Gene. The sentimental, where did that fucking come from? 1980 Gene song. I love that. When I listen to that on the box.
Naked City's got some great stuff, you know.
Yep, that too.
In the Naked City.
They did a great job on the Kiss booth.
10 million stories.
Yeah. So when are you going to do? You're going to do a Kiss show here. You're like nailing all these songs.
I know. Yeah. Come on, well, my goal is, you know, I was like, at some point while my hair's long, I should do a Kiss biopic where I play all of them.
We said this before.
Like stage play.
You like got that. You got the split down the middle there, like Ace's solo album.
Yeah,
cover.
That's right. Yeah,
it's
right.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I think you could pull it off. One man. Shut the fuck up. That's all you do for Peter. Fuck
that's all you gotta do for Peter.
Fuck
you, asshole. Right. So Gene's record, I love the kind of like soul and Beatles aspect that he brought in. The irony that Paul's doing Soul Station, when in a lot of ways, like that's what Gene's solo record started leaning to more than Paul's did. And as much as he's got a Beatles background, he was very far away from it in that. It was much more like, because he was fucking Donna Summer or Diana Ross.
Diana Ross, Donna Summer.
Both.
All of them. Cher.
Cher.
Right. And they all sang back up on the record. Right.
Yep. Yep.
Peg Bundy.
I would argue that one of the best things that came out of the solo records for Ace was Anton Figg.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Because his partnership with Anton Figg because one of the interesting things about the guitar player doing his own band and giving enormous drum solos,
yes,
not to Peter, but to the next drummer. Let me explain something to you folks. That's kind of a fuck you.
Yeah.
As much as they were supposed to be, you know, team Peter and Ace and team
Paul. Yeah, that didn't
Paul
work out too well.
No. And Ace basically found his wings with a different drummer the same way Gene and Paul did.
Great point.
And it's not a coincidence that Peter's my favorite. So for all purpose, I'm just putting it out there. Peter's my favorite. But it's not a coincidence that Peter could never find another band that could make one album.
Right.
And he tried a few different bands. Nobody could stand because he's just
he's a pain. He
rubs people the wrong way. He's just a constant complainer, whiner,
right,
bitching all the time. I love him. He's my favorite guy, but I know what he's like. And I know Paul in his life now is like,
I don't need that.
Fuck
shit.
That. I'm not dealing with this shit. I make That's enough right. money. I don't need to listen to that and have his wife come over to me, give me his demands. He's probably like, I'm not ever dealing with that again.
And Eric's such a mensch, and Eric Carr was such a good dude. Arguably, in my lifetime, Eric Carr was the Kiss drummer I knew best.
Mm.
Because they made the most albums with him.
Yep.
And Eric Singer's played a lot of those songs. And then the Peter songs were totally different when played by Carr or Singer.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
And Eric, like, I just remember when Eric Carr was introduced to the band and I was young. And so I was like, I don't know, like 11 years old, something like shit like that. And I was just going to grow up as a Kiss fan. And then all of a sudden, who's this dude dressed as a fox? I was like, oh no. And then I heard Creatures and I was like, oh yeah, this guy's fucking amazing. Who is this dude?
Exactly.
Right? Yep.
And just, I Love It Loud was the, in many ways, the intro of Eric Carr to the world of Kiss music. And had he been a decade older, Eric Carr, and been the guy, I would argue the first three Kiss records would have sounded more Zeppelin-y in their song quality, in their recording quality.
I believe that as well. I don't know if they'd be better, but they would definitely be
would have sounded better and they would have sold better. Because ultimately, what did the live record do but put Peter in a situation where he had to play loud?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Which he couldn't keep up with.
Right.
Now, my last question for you would be this. You're with a bunch of celebrities, you're in Hollywood. Anybody that you're surprised or gives you a I would say that. All right, let me rephrase this. Do you run into big Kiss fans, people that are like, I love them, or do you run into people that kind of snobby about Kiss in music as far as your fandom?
I bond about Kiss with a bunch of people. Chris Jericho was one of, obviously one of the standouts in that.
Yep.
But nobody dares cross a line on my music taste.
Love it.
I'm shocked.
Nobody goes, oh, I don't like that band when I say I like a band.
Yep.
Nobody does that.
Oh, children's music.
Doesn't fucking, dude, I can lean in to somebody's face and go, I love Kiss, Richard Marx, Winger, and Nickelback.
and they're not going to say shit.
And partly because they know I'm serious and I'm not fucking around and I love these guys.
Sure.
But on the other hand, it's because they're cowards and weak.
Gotcha.
honest to God. Like and if you grow up a Kiss fan, you get some pretty thick skin early. Especially if you've been in since day one. I bought my first Kiss record when I was 5 years old with my own money. It cost $7 at a flea market in Friendship, Indiana.
Wow.
And it was the originals. It was the original album.
Oh, the box set.
Yeah. Nice. It was the three records.
Yeah.
$7 for all three in 1975.
Wow.
But 76 really. But I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Amazing.
And took it home and I was like, I'm instantly in love. This is exactly what I thought it would sound like looking at it. I know this. I know this inside me.
Yep.
And that was enough, and again, that's why I don't begrudge people their music taste as long as I feel like it's doing them a service.
Mm.
Yeah. If you're if your music makes you feel like shit, then I'll interject. If you're like, I don't know why I'm fucking, I don't know, I can't, I'm not motivated in my life. I'm like, it's all that fucking Morrissey, asshole. That's what's the problem. You listen to shit that makes you think the world's going to end all the goddamn time.
That is the worst. I tried that one time. A friend gave me. I'm like, I don't understand this. Who's enjoying this? I don't get it.
Life is miserable enough. I don't need any help from music.
See, that's funny that you say that, because Zeus and I, we're massive grunge fans. We take a beating from our friends because they say the same thing. And I'm like, okay, yeah. A lot of Alice in Chains, one of our all-time favorite bands, a lot of that stuff is very, very down and depressing. You listen to the Dirt album. I've always said, by the time you're done listening to Dirt, you're on heroin. You know,
yeah. Dirt is a heroin. It's basically all heroin jingles.
Absolutely.
Heroin. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but we love it. We love Pearl Jam and Nirvana and Screaming Trees. You know all that stuff. We love it.
Well, I would argue, Pearl Jam, and Alice in Chains are not grunge bands. They are metal bands.
Yep.
And one of them leans more towards like AOR rock, which is
Pearl Jam is classic rock.
Pearl Jam's like classic American rock. Totally.
Pearl Jam 10 is one of the most pristine recorded records you'll ever fucking hear.
Absolutely.
And the same thing is true of Alice in Chains. Like, listen to the acoustics and the clean
Jerry Cantrell's a genius.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And I've sung with Jerry and Sean. Oh,
no kidding.
I sang, one of the first times, if not the first time after Lane died, that they performed together.
Wow.
They were in Vegas at a Steel Panther show at one of these places that Panther used to perform all the time. And they're like, come on, guys, you want to come up and do Man in the Box or something like that.
Nice.
The lead singer.
Okay.
The lead singer of Steel Panther, Michael Starr, Ralph, doesn't like singing Skid Row and Alice in Chains because it's hard. His voice is that airy, breathy, prettier version of things, and it's work, you know. Whereas I love that shit. Yep. And so he was like, Hal, come on and sing this one. And so I sang with Sean and Jerry.
Nice.
And Jerry hugged me after, which was really awesome. Random and weird.
Wow.
That's awesome, though.
That's amazing. We're seeing Jerry on his solo tour next month. He's coming to Boston. So
is your silence on Nirvana because you don't like them?
No. I was going to say that Nirvana is a different thing altogether. And Nirvana is what I would call pop punk, not grunge. Yeah. And I think they're more they were more like Green Day than they were grunge. The closest thing to grunge,
part of them,
what people would say is grunge, honestly, and the stuff that made it, anyways, the stuff that actually made it to air. The only thing that I would call grunge that's truly grunge is Soundgarden. And Soundgarden was effectively just a redo of Black Sabbath.
Yep.
With a more of a soul singer.
Mm-hmm.
If you took a soul singer and put him in Black Sabbath, that's what you get. You get Soundgarden.
It's a great point too, yeah.
And even then, once you get to Black Hole Sun, stuff like that, dude, that production sounds like fucking Pink Floyd. Get out of here with this grunge stuff. Stop this, like, we just turned on the tape and recorded it like a fucking, like, Brendan O'Brien, you know how much fucking time he spent making stuff sound like shit?
Get
out of here with grunge. They had to try. They're all playing through the same amps everybody else did. And like when Zakk Wylde brings in his rig and he sets it up and he turns everything all the way up and then plugs a whammy bar, you know, like plays a wah-wah pedal through it and is playing as loud as he can. That's not grunge any more than they are. You know what I mean? Like amps only get so loud. If you're blowing out the recording, it's the mic, not the amp. No, there are no amps that can break mics. And certainly none of the ones that the grunge bands are using, for fuck's sake. They weren't rolling in a wall of Marshalls.
That's right.
Fuck off. You're recording a cone this big out of a four stack. Half these assholes use tweeds in studio. Piss my ass, grunge. You overmodulated stuff on purpose.
Yeah.
Hell, you're recording fired up talking about grunge. I love this.
I love it. I mean, I like... I became like, I'm a huge Alice in Chains fan. I love their work. Great. Or whatever. And, you know, yes. And you know, like one of my favorite things used to be, the cannot for the man who wonders straw that broke your back, you're under. Now you know that none are blind. So I went to a show in LA that my friend Jody was managing. She was working at A&M, and they had her pocketing certain bands that they were developing. And there was a five band demo show that A&M was putting on for people and to see which bands they liked. And one band was called Burning Tree. And they were the one that A&M was really like rooting for. And this was like 1989.
Yep.
And they were third on the list. And the fifth band was this band called Alice in Chains.
Wow.
And the lead singer, they were fifth. And they basically, like, everybody was going to go home by the time they played was the idea. They weren't headlining. This was a showcase show for label people who fuck off early. You want the first two slots, but they were like, well, the good band is coming on to the third one. If you want to leave after that, that's fine. And she asked me afterwards, like, what I thought of the bands. And I was like, Alice in Chains is the only band that has any meaning here. Everybody else can, I've forgotten everything about them.
Wow. Amazing.
And yeah, they did five songs off of Dirt. They didn't do Man in the Box because it was too slow, I think, for what, you know, where they were going. And it was a song that came later in the recording process.
Mm-hmm.
But I met Jerry at that show and basically just chatted with him between bands.
Wow.
Like, when are you guys on? I'll stick around. Like, that kind of shit. Well, before they broke, you know. It's not like we, you know, kept in touch, but yeah. I was like talking to this guy, just hanging out. And then they did their show and I was like, this was fucking great. You guys were amazing. It's like, oh, well, we'll see, you know, like,
yeah, right.
That's where they were at the time, you know. And they, if you look at Blitzen, whether it's the second to last song on Dirt or, on Facelift, the last tune, yeah, the
I so, know something about you, real,
yes, that's it, that's it. So yeah, it's basically the label telling them you need an
upbeat song.
Yeah, you need a Guns N' Roses song.
That's exactly what that song is like. It's totally. It sounds weird.
It makes no fucking sense.
It's not Alice in Chains.
No, it isn't. And it's the label telling them what to do. Yeah. And and I remember hearing that, going, "What is this doing here?"
Because Facelift is fantastic, but when you hear that, you're like, "Whoa, this is weird."
Yeah,
yeah. They had a song on the box set, "I Can't Have You Blues," which. On Alice in Chains box set, which I sent to you guys once in a while. I'm like, listen to this. Tell me who this is.
Yeah.
And it's the most hair metal song you've probably heard. Yes. You're like, that's Alice in Chains?
Right.
Yeah.
They weren't against it at that point. And again, they're a highly produced band. Listen to I Stay Away. This is not a band that
don't
was
get
like,
us
nah.
started.
Yep. We love that.
When we were in college, we had the 5-disc change player, and we would sit down, drink before we get out for a party. And we throw that on 10, Nirvana's Nevermind.
Super Unknown.
Super Unknown single soundtrack. Or Purple from like STD. Right. And have a blast.
And all those guys, by the way, Jerry Cantrell, you know, the guys in Pearl Jam, they're all like Ace Frehley. That's why I picked up the guitar.
Absolutely. Yep. That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
They're all Kiss fans.
Yep.
And so they don't have this hate for it.
No.
And the only time I found anybody, like the only person hostile to the idea of metal or rock was Chris Cornell, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because he said at one point, you know, like, I didn't know we were metal or whatever. Like, he would joke about, you know, kind of fuck hair bands kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then recently you had Eddie come out with that thing about, like, I didn't
like Motley Crue.
The Motley Crue fight. Yeah.
Right. And I'm sure some people looked at it as like Pearl Jam punching down. I would say it's lateral, but you don't make that kind of music and you don't bring that kind of value. I love Pearl Jam, like the early Pearl Jam. When they became Phish 2.0, I kind of lost interest.
Yes.
Because they're all trying, everybody's jockeying to be the next Grateful Dead. That's what they're trying to do. Because that's where the money and the hang is. And you don't have to write any songs anymore. You just jam. Do other people's shit. And
or you can say the musical director of Pearl Jam became Eddie Vedder after the first four or five albums. And that's why Pearl Jam changed.
Yeah, because those first few albums.
Used to be Stone and Jeff and Mike. The rest of the band jumping in with ideas. Now it's, hey, we'll do an album if Eddie wants one.
Yeah,
we'll
exactly.
do something if Eddie wants to do that. And you put it in his hands. That's why you get albums that sound like his solo shit.
Yep.
I agree. And I think,
Oh yeah. We're talking about Kiss, right?
Yeah. But, but we are, I'll tell you what, we're talking about like Kiss's stepchildren.
Yeah.
You know, MacReady loves.
I mean, Mike MacReady absolutely
loves Ace.
You go listen to the outro solo on a live by MacReady. That is the most Ace influenced solo you'll ever hear.
Alive is love theme from Kiss.
Pretty much about the beginning of it. Yeah.
Think about that. It is.
No question. Yeah.
And porn music.
Totally. Yeah,
that's right. Yep.
Yeah.
That's Alf is great.
I love that stuff, but I wouldn't call it grunge. And I think it's just it was another iteration of rock. And I think labels come up with these derivations and these turns in trends so that they could sell records so that rock doesn't roll into the next thing without them being able to like set a generational line so they can sell records. Like that's the old shit. You want the new shit, kid.
Exactly.
And after a while, you're like, actually, a lot of this stuff lines up and there's a thread throughout rock that you can ride and that there's blues rock and there's life rock. And they both walk hand in hand, sometimes in the same band like King's X. And sometimes they bifurcate out into two separate things. And I would argue that that Kiss doesn't do blues. It's not their thing. It's not what they're about. And even the sad parts are hopeful. It's it's the nature of the guys involved and what it would take for you to put on that makeup and go out every night. You can't go out there going, I hope this will work. Like you can't even have that thought. Mm. If you're that kind of guy, think about the kind of human that dresses up like that and does a show. Jesus, you're not going to write a song. You're not going to write an apology.
Yep.
But the last thing I'll leave you with that is like hair metal, grunge. We weren't calling it that when we were into that music. We never called anything hair metal. We called it hard rock, heavy metal. When grunge came out, when we were in college, that was all part of this new thing called alt rock. It was alternative. It was all called alternative, whether it be Green Day, Nirvana.
Yes. It was alternative until it was all over the fucking radio.
Exactly. There's
no such thing as alternative pop. Kiss my ass. Once it gets into the pop realm, it's just rock now, dummy. It's the airwaves. There's no alternative to it. But the idea is like, for fuck's sake, Smells Like Teen Spirit, first of all, is a Boston lick. And secondly, it's that line is from a deodorant ad for girls.
That's right.
Smells like Teen Spirit was a deodorant that lasted about 6 months.
That's Kurt's genius
for girls. Yeah. But it was the same thing as like what the Ramones did effectively, which is take generationally early, like two decades earlier song styles, and then either speed them up or slow them down to mess with the format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Look, we could do this all night with you.
Totally.
It's fucking amazing. But before we go,
one last Kiss question. Okay.
If I do that, we'll be on for another hour.
Totally.
Tell us where people can find you, what you're into right now, where they can see you, whether it's stand up, where they can listen to you, anything.
Yeah. Next week, I'm in Michigan, in Holland, Michigan, and Grand Rapids, doing stand-up at like four different places. You can go to HowlSparks.com and look at my calendar for that. And then Nerd Halen's got some gigs coming up. We're at Yamaba Indian Casino on the April 1st, I think is the next gig. We just did the Monsters of Rock Cruise. We're going to do it again next year. And so we're stacking gigs. This is the Monsters of Rock was our 14th and 15th show together. Nice. It's kind of amazing.
I catch your stuff on YouTube all the time. It's fucking fantastic.
Meteoric rise. Thank you. And my live stream is every day of the week. 5 days a week. My afternoon show is politics. It's Hal Sparks Mega Worldwide. And then in the mornings, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I do a morning show. It's a little more philosophical, less directly political and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday, I have a radio show, a Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide, which has been on WCPT in Chicago for over a decade now. And then I, stand up shows and music and acting and all this stuff. So, yeah.
When are you coming to Boston soon?
If
you can't tell, Boston, we have a Boston
for
accent.
The springtime.
Yeah, there you go. Please come to Boston.
Right. More than likely, it'll be late spring or the summer. Okay.
Stand up or the band?
Stand up, more than likely. First, although I want to drag the guys back east. And if we can get some gigs lined up, we'll basically start stacking, because that's definitely got to happen. I would love to play Boston doing Nerd Halen. Oh my gosh. So
New
fun.
Hampshire, the ballroom, probably places like that.
Places. Yep.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
And, those will definitely get announced. And it started to steamroll or snowball, I suppose, at this point. Because it was like, I told Caleb when we started this, I'm like, it's going to take about 3 years for us to get off the ground. And then COVID happened. It was like 2 years in the middle of it. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it didn't really slow it down. The growth of it actually maybe even sped up a little bit in the process. So fingers crossed, it'll keep growing that way. And I just love doing it because it brings so much joy to people. Mm-hmm.
It's the best David Lee Roth we've heard. And we heard him on the tour when he opened up for Kiss.
I saw him open for them as well. So, and that's another story for another time. We'll talk about that next one. But So infotainmentwars.com is my, will bring you to my YouTube show. If you're on Twitch, it's twitch.tv/Hal Sparks. People can follow me on Twitter @Hal Sparks or on Instagram @Hal Sparks. I'm on the ground floor of most social media things when I can. And then if you're ever at a Kiss show, and you're at your seat and you got your beverage and your snacks and you're wearing your new merch shirt. It smells like formaldehyde or a truck or something. And you just do this, just look over and look down the aisle. More than likely I'll be standing there.
Perfect. Love it. Hal, this has been a blast, man. Thank you so much for giving us so much of your time talking grunge, talking Kiss. It just a really blast of a time. Thank you so much.
We got to do this again, Hal. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
All right, and that was us chatting about everything with Hal Sparks. We talked Kiss. We talked grunge. We talked the anatomy of a vocal cord. It was fantastic. He's a blast. He loves to talk. He's passionate about what he's saying to us. And it was just a ton of fun. And we could have kept going. And after we stopped recording, we did keep going for a while with him. It was great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for me as well. I think that he's fascinating. The thing about it is he does put a lot of research into what he's talking about. He's got a constant kind of wise ass smirk on his face that I remembered from all those shows he used to do on VH1. Like,
yes,
like, you know, like sarcastic kind of
seeing him is a lot different than just listening.
Yeah,
to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
You kind of get his vibe and you laugh at it and it's funny as hell.
Yep.
Before we got recorded, my daughter came in and had to say hi to him too. He was kind enough to talk to her about that and about Lab Rats, that show that he was on. And great guy, knows a ton of shit about music. His Nerd Halen band on the Mork was fantastic from what we heard from our friends. And he's got a lot of, what do they say? Things in the oven. Basically,
God, absolutely.
He's all over the place. And he is very much Jericho-like, where, I'm a stand-up comedian. Why can't I be an actor? Yeah, I do that. Why can't I be in a band? Why can't I do a podcast? I love that. I love that about them both. They have the same type of personality. They're both super kind and gracious. And you don't get that, like, hey, I'm a star, you're not, and I'm going to talk to you like this. From either of them, they're both great guys, and it's fun and funny because they're friends with each other. And we were talking to Chris about the fact that we were having Hal on,
yep.
And you know, Hal has a great story. I won't share it now, but has a great story about Jericho on a show they were on together. But and it just goes to show you sometimes Kiss is everywhere. And Kiss goes through all sorts of stuff. Here's a guy I never thought would be a major Kiss fan, but, you know, here you go. And he's got a good background story and how he got into Kiss and why he got into Kiss. It's very similar to kind of Chris about getting into Kiss in the non-makeup era. But he likes all eras of Kiss as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we just find this stuff fascinating and we want to have guests like this on.
Yeah, it was great, too, because some of the questions that we asked him, and, you know, of course, we veered off because we start talking about everything. But I liked some of his differing theories on, you know, did Vinnie Vincent save Kiss? You know, that's like the cliche question. He's like, no, Eric Carr did. And I was like, whoa. And then he kind of went into an explanation of it. I'm like, OK, shit. Yeah, I never really heard that one before. Then I really, really liked how he went into how he's convinced that Paul Stanley blew his voice out during the reunion tour. And then that's when he went through the whole thing about the vocal cords. Just fascinating, like, theories and an informed opinion is what we love from people.
Yeah, when he was saying, hey, I can't fucking tune to this. I'm too lazy.
Yeah exactly.
Fucking just sing it in this fucking key, all right?
Yep. Oh, exactly. And then maybe my favorite part of the entire interview, other than the Kiss, was when we started to veer off into talking grunge for a little bit. That was just great. That was great.
And then he was his off the cuff Sebastian Bach vocals.
Oh my God. That was, he would break out into song throughout the whole interview. You guys heard awesome. It was great.
He actually has got the pipes. He can hit them. He can hit those notes. So,
When he was doing his Brian Johnson, if you saw his face, the way he was doing the Brian Johnson, it was great.
The neck all squeezed back. That was great. Well, we hope you liked it. We liked it. And we'll probably have Hal on again soon. And Tom, what we do next is we go to Question of the Week. And it's sponsored by...
That's right. Question of the Week is sponsored by a company involving our good friend, listener, and Patreon, Joe Decker. This week's Question of the Week is brought to you by Fusion Tech Data and Electric. Fusion Tech is a recognized communications contractor specializing in the construction, splicing, testing, and documentation of all types of fiber optics networks. Along with that, Fusion Tech Electric can service all your electrical construction needs, commercial, industrial, and utility, as well as electrical substation work and all UPS and DC power plant installation. Fusion Tech currently operates throughout the 5 boroughs of New York City, as well as New Jersey and the tri-state area, providing union labor with IBEW Local 3 in New York City and IBEW Local 164 and Local 102 in New Jersey. For more information about Fusion Tech, please visit them at www.fusiontech-llc.com or call them at 973-650-1357. Again, that is fusiontech-llc.com or call them at 973-650-1357.
For all your electrical and data needs.
Absolutely.
Guys are great. If you guys need some help in this area, go give a fellow Kiss fan and Loudcaster a call, Joe Decker, and please support our sponsor. And we thank Joe, Fusion Tech, and you Loudcasters. And now, question of the week.
Our question of the week comes from Frank from Facebook. This is a pretty interesting one. And it's funny because the answer kind of quickly popped into my head. So I'm anxious to see what you think. He said, guys, I was listening to your episode where you talked about things that are overrated and underrated in Kiss. Mm-hmm. Do you think there is anything in the Kiss world that is perfectly rated?
Alive.
Okay. That was going to be one for me. That was up there for me, but I thought it would be too obvious, but I liked it. My other one was going to be Rock and Roll Over. And I say that because I never hear, like, you hear people say, I love Destroyer. That's a little overrated. I love Love Gun. That's a little overrated. I love Harder Than Hell. Yeah, but it sounds crappy. I have never really heard anybody say anything overly negative about Rock and Roll Over. People say it's my favorite album. Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that. It's a great album. It's got great hits, deep cuts. But Alive 2, you're right. Alive 1, I would agree with you. Because a lot of things, we talk about this when we did our whole episode, a lot of things are either overrated or underrated when you're talking about Kiss. So
yeah, I'm also thinking critics like actually like Alive.
Yeah.
So they get some that love from it.
Yep.
You know, I do some people think that it's better than some of the tracks? I can see that argument. I mean, some of the studio tracks, I can see that argument. Yep. I think it's perfectly rated where it is. But I could be wrong, but I understand where you're coming from on Rock and Roll Over. You don't hear any hate on it.
No, that's a great question. Who knows? That could be a future episode down the road. We've done overrated and underrated. Maybe we'll do perfectly rated. Who knows?
Perfect.
But thank you for that question. That was amazing. And again, thank you to our sponsor, Joe Decker and Fusion Tech LLC. Awesome stuff. Thank you, everybody.
Yep. And once again, FusionTech-LLC.com. And the phone number is 973-650-1357. Tom, where can people find us?
Yes, as always, our email, shoutitoutloudcast@gmail.com. Shoutitoutloudcast@gmail.com. Please email us comments, questions, little quips, show ideas, anything. We read every single email. We might not read it all on the show, but we do read every single email. So please email us. You will not be lost and forgotten. And of course, our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, very active on all of those. Comment on our stuff, tag us, retweet, whatever you want. Be part of the family, stay involved. You can send us direct messages on all of those. As you heard earlier, we read a Facebook DM, so please consider that. And of course, we're part of that wonderful Pantheon Podcast Network of shows. Tons of great shows. We're so proud to be part of that family. We got our buddy Jay from the Hook Rocks. Great show. We got our buddies Baco and LC from Cobras and Fire. Those guys are crazy. They're doing their own March Madness thing coming up, March Badness, which is hilarious. Those guys are nuts. So check them out and all the other great shows on there. And as we said earlier, our wonderful and amazing Patreon family. We can't thank you guys enough, including our newest one, Johnny G. Thank you so much for being part of the family. You guys are the best, and we can't thank you enough for that.
I always like to repeat the email, shoutitoutloudcast@gmail.com. Shoutitoutloudcast@gmail.com. Feel free to DM us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We always love when we get those. We read them. Sometimes we don't get back to you that quickly, but we always take a look at them. Same with the emails as well. Please continue to subscribe to our YouTube channel. That is constantly growing. It's much appreciated. You guys have been joining at a nice pace. Let's keep it going, boys and girls. Keep subscribing to our YouTube channel. Then, in addition to that, keep giving us those five-star child reviews on Apple Podcast, on Podchaser, on Spotify, on Facebook. Wherever you can give a five-star review, please do so. It's a big help to us, and we really appreciate it. As a matter of fact, we have another one to read.
Yes, we do. This comes from Baby Daddy 9. Best Kiss podcast? Most definitely. And then it says, settle down. This is the funniest and most entertaining Kiss podcast out there. Great interviews, special guests, and good to have their album review crew episodes to discuss other artists that don't wear clown makeup. Well, thank you, Baby Daddy 9, for the five-star review, and thank you for the humorous five-star review. Those are the best kind, so we appreciate that very much. We know everybody's very busy these days, so to take some time and write something about us is very, very, we're very grateful for that. So thank you, Baby Daddy 9.
Yes, much appreciated. Those are always great. Tom, what we like to do now is we end with famous last words. That is lyrics from the great band Kiss. You got any?
Oh, I dug deep for this one.
Ooh.
Ooh. The Padre looks well fed.
What?
Remember what the good book said. Vultures circle overhead.
What the fuck is that?
Seduction of the Innocent.
Oh, God.
Not a good song.
All right, Tom. I'm not your Social Security. I'm not your Star Opportunity. Yeah. Oh, baby, you can have me. Absolutely. Won't you give me?
I'm not finishing it.
Oh,
I like that
song. Confessions.
That was another thing that Hal did a nice job talking about, the breaking down the four solo albums.
Confessions.
That's all I ask from you.
That's all I'm asking for.
Oh, yeah, I fucked up the lyrics, whatever. That shows you how often I listen to that album past Radioactive.
Confessions. Yeah. There's a lot of Nell Carter from Gimme a Break. From Gimme a Break.
Oh, Gimme a Break. I shall deserve it.
She had to be like the biggest lead, like, actress in a TV series, I think, of all time, right?
Like big, like physically big, or like big, like famous?
No, big like circumference. Big, big.
She's big. She's a big woman.
Other than Shirley from What's Happening Now, I'm thinking.
Were you just gonna say What's Going Down from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama?
Yeah, that too. But yeah,
Shirley from What's Happening. What the fuck?
She was a comedian too. I don't know. But she and I think Roseanne too may have been up there. They're not what you would call attractive.
They're not what you would call fit women.
Yeah. Only podcasters are fit, Tom.
That's right. That's right.
Well, we want to thank our guest, Hal Sparks, for coming on. Tom, thank you. Loudcasters, thank you. Kiss Army, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge thanks to Hal Sparks. What a treat that was to have him. Tons of fun. We love those kinds of guests, those kinds of interviews. Thank you, everybody out there, our Patreons, our Loudcasters, everybody. You guys rock. Thank you so much. And Zeus, as always, thank you.
Peace out, Girl Scout.
Joey, you like movies about gladiators?
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.